Welcome. This is your Joint Ways and Means Committee Subcommittee on Education. Today's Monday, April 9th, and we're having a public hearing on House Bill 5012. Before we start, might ask the staff if we have any special comments for us or any advice before we get underway with the testimonies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today you're starting the public hearing on the budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. That is scheduled for today through Wednesday, with public testimony on the following Monday. There will not be a meeting of the subcommittee this Thursday. Please note that because of the full committee meeting out of town, there will not be a subcommittee meeting on Thursday. We have some materials for you that I will talk to you about in just a couple of minutes that have been presented to you. We also have the Honorable David Wu here, who would like to testify on behalf of House Bill 5012, and he's in the audience now.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. And with that, then, if we could, we'd like to have the Honorable David Wu, United States Congressman from the great state of Oregon, here to talk to us a little bit today. Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon.
Terrific.
Perpetually dangerous. Chairman Jensen, Vice Chairman Devlin, honored members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Wu, member of the United States Congress representing Oregon's 1st Congressional District. I am also co-chair of the Congressional Community College Caucus, which my colleagues and I began in order to raise awareness of issues affecting community colleges and to ensure that community colleges have a place at the table in any federal discussion of education and workforce initiatives. I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today on this very important legislation. First, I want to recognize the hard work that you have already done and the hard work that lies ahead in order to provide the resources that this crucial component of our educational infrastructure needs to educate and train citizens, as well as to maintain a healthy and growing economy. Community colleges are the most responsive component of our education establishment for workforce and employment needs. Moreover, they are committed to reaching all students at every level and promoting hands-on learning experiences in all facets of education. We have no sector of education that serves a wider spectrum of our citizens each and every day. We know that employers seek people who are not only well-versed in existing concepts, but also adept at learning through inquiry and critical examination. In today's economy, employers are seeking a highly trainable workforce, not just a highly trained workforce. Community colleges are at the forefront of this effort. Almost 50% of undergraduate students are enrolled in community colleges, and two-year schools account for over one-third of all undergraduate enrollments in science, math, engineering, and technology. Community colleges are a cornerstone of our nation's undergraduate education system, particularly in mathematics and the sciences. As we all know, these areas of study are ever more critical to our nation and our state in order to maintain an economic edge in the global economy. For Oregon, I think this need is especially urgent because we are both a gateway and a frontline competitor among Pacific Rim nations. In fact, a recent National Academy of Sciences study made the following observations, which I think provide the context for the budget you are crafting in this committee. The National Academy's report titled Rising Above the Gathering Storm made a series of recommendations based on certain sobering observations, among which were: countries that have historically been technologic followers are now becoming technologic leaders. Take India, for example. Prior to the 1980s, India pursued a closed economy, economic policies that discouraged foreign investment, stifled competition, and launched a mass exodus of its best and brightest seeking opportunities abroad. India has since reversed course by opening much of its economy, reducing regulation, and investing in innovation. The Indian Institutes of Technology are now world-renowned. All of this has made India a world-class high-technology hub. China currently graduates nearly six times as many engineers each year as the United States. The European Union graduates about three times as many, and even South Korea, with only one-sixth of our population, graduates slightly more engineers every year than we do. U.S. dominance in awarding science and engineering doctoral degrees, patents, and patent citations is that all of those indicators are slipping. One reason I'm testifying before you today is because, like you, I realize the scope of these challenges require hard work, commitment, and investment from the federal government, state governments, local governments, and the private sector, all working together. Our community colleges are an absolutely fundamental element to solving these challenges by providing flexibility and adaptability, serving both our individual citizens and our collective economy. Equally important are the issues of affordability and access. Our community colleges work relentlessly to maintain this mission under challenging circumstances. Providing education for all Oregonians at all stages of their academic and professional lives can happen only if we all work to ensure that it is affordable to every Oregonian. Access at the right time and in the right place is absolutely vital. Students must have course availability, among other things, to accommodate their varied and complex needs. When I speak of accessibility, I speak also of breaking down long-standing barriers within educational institutions. These barriers, which have impeded student performance and achievement over many decades, include barriers between departments and disciplines, between bureaucracies and institutions, and even between the institutions themselves. This is particularly important for community colleges. To prepare students for the next level, either in the workforce or in education, community colleges must overcome significant obstacles between the educational demands of the workplace and four-year institutions. Unfortunately, community college faculty and administrators often face barriers that prevent them from working closely with their colleagues in four-year schools, with business leaders, local school districts, and high school teachers. Breaking down these barriers is one reason I introduced the Community College Partnership Act, which encourages close cooperation and collaboration between community colleges and four-year schools so that students will be better prepared for the increasingly complex workplace of the 21st century. The legislation seeks to create a seamless set of transitions among the various education institutions, and it is a top priority for the American Association of Community Colleges. I am committed to passing this legislation in the 110th Congress. I share all this with you to illustrate the fact that we need participation from all levels of government as well as private industry. Like you, my colleagues and I must wrestle with tight budgets and competing priorities. We are working to make tough budget decisions that will allow us to ensure access and progress. In closing, I'd like to mention what I think is a terrific American strength. I've often said that one of the things that keeps the American economy strong is our sense of, if you will, entrepreneurial paranoia. I don't mean this in a negative way. I mean that we're always looking over our shoulder to see who might be gaining on us. And I believe that it is one of the strong and great motivators of American innovation and focus. Today, we face a world where we are not just looking over our shoulders, but we are also observing some countries overtake us. I'm asking you to all be a little paranoid, but with that positive American spirit that gives us the focus and wherewithal to do great things together, to build an educational system that is truly at the forefront of our economic competitiveness and makes possible each and every citizen's dreams. Thank you for this opportunity to be with you today.
Thank you very much, Congressman Wu. We really appreciate your words for us here today. Are there any questions or comments from the panel for the Congressman?
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank the Congressman for coming and being so attentive to these issues because you're right, community colleges are an important part of our education system. So thank you for your work in Congress and coming here today.
Thank you, Senator. I will try to do everything that I can at the federal level. I understand that this legislature and this committee will do everything within its power to do the right thing by our post-secondary education system. And I also want to add that at a citizen level, we just got through with a training session for those community colleges and other institutions which depend upon bonds or levies, a training session on how best to run those campaigns and communicate the importance of the mission to enhance the probability that those measures pass. So this is a multi-tiered attempt to make sure that a crucial component of the education system is adequately funded.
And if I may follow up, thank you. And thank you, Congressman, because as you know, not one levy passed last election. But what we also need from our federal partner is to redirect some of the money that is going in places where it needn't go back into education. I know that Congress has done a good job since taking over since November of lowering the interest rate, putting more money back into the Pell Grants because we are making college unattainable for many of our students, and especially people who are retraining and have families to support.
Thank you, Senator. We have taken at least a few initial steps in the proper direction.
Thank you.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congressman Wu, maybe I could clarify one of those. Although I believe there may have been a vote on lowering the interest rate, I'm not sure it has cleared both chambers. Is that correct?
It has not cleared both chambers.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, Congressman Wu, I think all of us recognize the true impact of those significantly increased interest rates on the true cost of attendance for students and how, in a sense, it's a very significant increase in their burden. We're hoping it passes both chambers. So just like in this building, passing one chamber doesn't get you very far.
I cannot agree with you more. Increasing the minimum wage and some other things, the two chambers work in different ways. The other institution in Washington, D.C., just as the two chambers here, work in different ways, and we were able to get both through the House in a more expeditious manner, but we look forward to action in the other body and as soon as possible. If it were not for some of the restrictions, self-imposed restrictions, I might add, in terms of paying for things as we go, perhaps we could have stepped down those interest rates even faster than was in the legislation which the U.S. House passed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, a rhetorical question because I just can't resist. So
the devil made you do it. Go ahead.
Yes. So you have an enlightened House and we have an enlightened Senate.
Oh, I think you could have left that one under your shoe.
That's the last recognition you get.
I appreciate all my colleagues in Salem as I appreciate all of my colleagues in Washington, D.C.
Right answer. Well, in light of the fact that one of the senators from Oregon is a constituent of mine, I will try to lean on him as when he comes for his constituent work and see if I can get him interested in this. Along the lines of community colleges and getting away from the discussions which will lead us nowhere that we've been on. Wondering what can you do for us, or what are your plans for us in terms of the workforce development portion of the community colleges? Do you have any sense of how much resources might be available, might be forthcoming in that particular area?
I serve on the committee that shapes that legislation, and we have not refocused on that in this Congress yet. But the prediction is difficult, especially about the future. But I suspect that two things. Additional resources will be found for those workforce initiatives, and that secondly, the attempt to block grant some of those funds or to turn some of those funds into individual vouchers will not be in this iteration of the legislation.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions, comments for the representative, the congressman? Thank you very much again.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and honor to be with you all today.
Our honor to have you here. Okay. With that then, Steve, where are we headed from here?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention to you, point out to you a couple of items that were distributed to you today. One of them is a letter addressed to you, dated with today's date, from the department on follow-up questions. And these are responses to questions that you had back in January when they were up before you for an overview. So you may want to keep these with the presentation binder, which is the binder that the agency will be going through as they discuss their agency budget. The other item that I have distributed to you is just a two-page chart item that looks a little bit at community college funding for the department historically. And it just repeats some graphs that you've seen for other agencies and things before you in the subcommittee in a similar format. So on the top of this, you can see a chart that compares, since 1999-01, the state's funding for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and looks at that on an inflation-adjusted basis. 1999-01 would be the last biennium before the most recent recession hit, and you can see that community college funding was reduced significantly after that recession. And that even in the current biennium, which is to say 2005-07, it remains approximately 15% below the 99-01 level after you adjust for inflation. This is a fairly similar pattern to what you would see also for state funding for the Department of Higher Education. And again, it's a situation where the state reduced funding for post-secondary education by more in general than the decline in overall funds. What this chart shows on the first page, I did not update this for the co-chair's chart, for the co-chair's budget, but you can see that the governor's recommended budget level would restore funding to 95.5% of the 99-01 level, again, adjusted for inflation. So the number is actually higher, but with inflationary adjustments, it would have a purchasing power of 99.5. The co-chair's budget number, as you know, the co-chairs have a different total for community colleges in their proposal at this point. Their number would be equal to 88.1% in 07-09. And then finally, there's a second page here, a rather unattractive chart, which is fairly messy, but which is trying to show, instead of looking at the funding for the department, looking at the funds that have been available to the 17 community colleges in Oregon themselves. And what this chart shows for each biennium, to start with 9901, is it shows the state support number. That's the general fund dollars that the state's been providing to the 17 colleges. On top of that are the property taxes that they are collecting for their operations through their property tax levies. And the combination of these two we generally refer to as public support for the institution. And then the third major source, there are additional minor sources beyond these, but the third major source of funding for community colleges is our tuition revenues, which are shown in yellow and are added on top. And if you look at these numbers here, just a few things to note is that during the period between 9901 and 2003-05, where there was a decline in state support in terms of certainly on an inflation-adjusted budget level, but also in terms of actual dollars, property taxes and tuition dollars increased and offset that, so that there was actually about a 19.2% increase in these general operating revenues for community colleges when you compare 2003-05 to the period prior to the recession. So there was an increase. There has been very large increases in tuition rates that you'll be hearing about during this presentation. But one of the effects of these was to allow the total size of the pie, if you want to call it that, to grow over this period following the recession. Looking forward, however, if you look at the bar that's about in the middle here, which is 2005-07, our current biennium, you can see that going forward, I haven't attempted to project tuition dollars since they are set independently by the community college district boards and are not a function of state control. But looking only at the public support, you can see that the central budget level would have increased public support by 3.1% over the current biennium. The governor's recommended budget increased support by approximately 12.8%. I'm sorry that 12.8% figure isn't in there, but if you want to write that in above that bar, that would have increased support by about 12.8% from 2005-07. And the co-chair's proposal increases support by about 7.8% from the 2005-07 level. The 7.8%, to put things in some context, would compare to a 6.2% increase this biennium over the prior biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. And before any comments or questions, I wanted to apologize to my congressman, Congressman Wu, and I wanted to thank you for being here. I had to check to see if I still had a job at the community college, so that's why I wasn't here for your testimony. No, I was testifying. I was testifying on a little bill having to do with stem cell research. So I apologize, and I think your presence here speaks volumes, and so I really appreciate it, and your leadership on supporting education at all levels is duly noted. So thank you very much. I'm going to watch the DVD. Are there any questions or comments on the LFO discussion that we just heard, or Senator Morse?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Steve, for this data. I believe it would be an enhancement to include FTE student population as well, because that really is a driver. And if our state support for FTE, how that has increased vis-a-vis also the total cost. That's a pretty clear indication. I know the previous work that's been done in looking at the OUS system per student basis that we had looked at during the interim, there's a delta in the last 16 years of $169 million just to get back on a student-adjusted, inflation-adjusted basis. I'm curious how this would also play out in community colleges.
We can get that for you.
Thank you.
Representative Barnett.
Thank you. And I completely concur with the senator's request. Makes a lot of sense to me. In addition to that, it may be useful to understand the relationship statistically or numerically, at least, between tuition changes at the community colleges and student enrollment. I know there are at least two alternate hypotheses about student enrollment at the community colleges. One of them is that student enrollment shifts occurred as a result of the enormous increases in tuition that have taken place over the last several biennia. The other is that student enrollment changes are a result of the improvement in the economy. I think it would be useful for us to examine the numbers. I'm quite certain I know what the correct read of student population is, but I know that there are those in authority who disagree with me.
There's some interesting information in this handout from the community colleges. Towards the back of it, they disaggregate some of the enrollment information.
So that may be there already.
It is quite interesting.
Thank you, Representative Mark, and I appreciate that.
Further comments? Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bender, could you comment just briefly on the difference between how we currently calculate the EBL on community colleges versus how we calculate the EBL for K through 12, because I think it's being given too much credit in this budget.
The essential budget level calculation for community colleges is done on a basis that the state uses throughout the state budget for what we typically would call special payments, which are payments to entities outside of state government. And the essential budget level calculations, those are inflated from one biennium to another based on an inflation rate that would match the consumer price index projections. That somewhat oversimplifies the method for the community colleges because it is done on an annual basis as opposed to a biennial basis. But essentially, the way that the state calculates the essential budget level is it looks at, we look at the public resources, which in these charts would be the red and the blue together, and see what the total in public resources are, and then adjust those for inflationary increases that are allowed for services and supplies in the budget, and then back out from the amount of general fund required, whatever the projected property tax amounts are. If, again, you look at the second chart that I distributed to you this afternoon, you can see that that inflationary increase was 3.1%, and that it that was the sum of the two. Unlike in the state school fund, there are specific adjustments that are made for changes in enrollment and changes in compensation costs, which are not included for the community college support fund distribution.
Madam Chair, what I wanted to make the point is it's a vastly different calculation. And if we were calculating the increased cost of state government at 3.1%, we wouldn't have any problem balancing this budget.
Well,
instead of that, at the percentages that we are actually having having to increase it, I mean, because of the actual costs of doing business are going up far faster than the 3.1%, particularly if you look at the human services budget and you look at the rate of increase that we are adding to that budget.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that if you just look at the inflationary aspects of salaries and loading costs, benefits and retirement programs and that kind of thing, it is very difficult to make it work on 3.1%. Representative Barnes.
And that's a biennial number, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's... Yes.
It's a biennial number. So it's really 1.55% per year. Round it off. And I appreciate Senator Devlin's continued comments after my gasp, because of course the point is that there's no way that we could fund the state programs with 3.1% increase,
right?
And end up with anything like the same program level that we had last time.
Forward.
Thank you. And also, Representative Jensen wanted me to be sure that I acknowledge the presence of all the students here today. It's very much appreciated. There are still a couple months to go, so don't lose hope. We'll see what we can do here. And with that, I would like to call up Cam Poos-Brawley, the Commissioner for Community College Services. That's the plan, isn't it?
Yes.
And by the way, I would say, Steve, did you know you sound terrible?
Yeah.
And you're coming with us on the road show?
No.
Okay, good.
Good.
It's Bruce Paul.
I felt bad. Did you get it back again?
No, that was
good. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Cam Poos-Brawley, Commissioner of Community Colleges and Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And with me is Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services, budget analyst for the department. I'm appreciating the questions that you all are asking already, recognizing that we have, I have in front of you considerable information to cover today, and I want to thank you for giving us the next few days to give you a glimpse into community colleges and workforce development. Because our time is limited, I'm going to move briskly. I am not using a PowerPoint. I am just going to use the slides. But I do encourage you to interrupt me so that you get answers to the questions that you have, not just the information I wanted you to have.
Yeah, I think not using PowerPoint should give you at least another 10 million boost to spread from this committee. Thank you.
I want to start by hitting just a few highlights. I think Steve has, Mr. Bender has given us some important information about what the community college budget buys. Annually, we're serving 357,000 students in a broad and comprehensive mission at community colleges, strengthening academic knowledge, providing entry into an advancement in the workforce, providing adult basic learning, and of course, an all-important aspect, providing employers with specialized training for their employees. There's going to be a lot of trends, a lot of data, a lot of facts and figures in this presentation, but it all comes down to your decision when you move the CCWD budget out of this room and onto the floor about the people that are sitting behind me, particularly the students. And I want to bring you two stories this morning. Tanya McGonigal, I've asked her to stand up so that you can see who she is. Thank you. Tanya is a student from Portland Community College. She graduated in 2005. She went through the Gateway Program. The Gateway Program to college provides students between the ages of 16 and 20 who have dropped out or left high school with an opportunity to complete their high school diploma and earn an associate's degree at the same time. You heard a little bit about this program when you were at PCC, and I wanted to make sure you saw another face. This program demands a high level of commitment from the student and at least an eighth grade reading level. The program is extremely demanding, and students are held to high standards of attendance and performance. Tanya McGonigal graduated from that program, the PCC Gateway Program, in 2005 after 3.5 years. She was homeschooled for most of her life, and she came to PCC with very little classroom experience. She attended school for only a few years. She found the experience not the right fit socially, and was not academically challenged. Her parents decided to try to homeschool Tanya, and she took her out of high school to do so. Homeschooling left Tanya with little opportunity to learn social skills and provide her with few credits that she needed for her high school diploma and to go on to college. She had long dream of going to college and earning a degree. She is well on her way to reaching that goal thanks to the Gateway to College program. Today, Tanya is a junior at Portland State University and is on a business management and accounting degree track. The Gateway to College program is a solution for many students who, just like Tanya, do not succeed in a traditional high school environment, something that a comprehensive mission of community college does provide. Thanks so much. And I have another real-life story. Unfortunately, Frank Wilson can't be here because he's at work. After two decades of working in a lumber mill, Frank Wilson wanted a change. Although uncertain about what to do, he was clear about one thing. I didn't want to just look for another job. I wanted some retraining. With advice from his wife and a daughter, who was attending Lane Community College, Frank visited Lane and visited a counselor, and they steered him toward the computer field. And in 1997, he quit his mill job to attend Lane Community College full-time. After 2 years, he earned an associate's degree in computer user support. A quote, "It's the best thing I've ever done." Today, Frank, I won't tell you how old he is the database and facilities manager for a Eugene nonprofit where he's worked for the past 6 years. In addition to that work, he teaches two classes at Lane Community College in their continuing education department, which offers non-credit courses to help students improve skills or train for a job. Frank enjoys helping others gain confidence in front of a computer, whether it's for work or for play. Now I'm going to give away his age. Our age group didn't grow up with computers, and so I help calm their fears and help them feel comfortable in using a computer. Frank says he also enjoys the long-standing connection with Lane, saying, "I had a good experience. I started there, and now I'm teaching there. It's come full circle." And that's Frank Wilson. We would have liked to have had him here in front of you, but probably better that he was working. So I'm going to move to the slides, and I'm going to move quickly. And each slide has a page number on it, so I'm going to move along, and if you have questions, please just stop me. Today we're going to talk about how CCWD came to be, what is its history, about the drivers, what drives the budget, what drives the department, and then a beginning conversation about performance measures, although we will be returning to that. The history, from 1960 to 1987, oversight of the community colleges was in the Oregon Department of Education. You may or may not know that in 1959, the Oregon Legislative Assembly provided for the formation of Oregon's community colleges, and in 1961, there were just under 20,000 students enrolled. Average tuition was less than $10. Now, I have a little factoid note. At Central Oregon Community College, which really started in 1949, it was $3.50 a course. Community colleges have had a commissioner and an agency since 1987, so for the last 20 years, we've been separated from the Department of Education, and the State Board of Education is the governance body for both community colleges and the department. A little more on the history. In 1997, federal workforce development programs were moved from economic development to the department, and in 1999, the name was changed to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Oregon does rely on that federal funding to meet the needs of workers who have been dislocated or are currently underskilled. And we like to think that we provide the most effective use of that federal investment. This slide also gives you a glimpse of some information that you've already had, which is what's the general fund look like for the last several biennial. Why does this department exist anyway? To distribute and be accountable for public funds. Distributed to the 17 community colleges, there are 19 adult basic skill programs across the state. There is a youth conservation corps program in every county. There are 7 workforce investment areas. And we do this because Oregonians need the skills, both basic skills and technical skills, certificates and degrees, and because businesses statewide need a workforce that's capable and competent
Slide number 7 is a list of facts of who we serve. Oregonians need to have access to as much training and education as possible for us to compete in the global economies. Certainly, Congressman Wu brought to you some very salient facts. A quote from Richard Florida, who published a book in 2004 called The Rise of the Creative Class, and I quote, In a globally competitive economy of the 21st century, state economies are in large part will thrive or decline based on how well they cultivate and retain knowledge workers. And a knowledge worker is an individual who possesses post-secondary education credentials, not necessarily a bachelor's degree, but technical aptitudes, the ability to learn rapidly, and an entrepreneurial approach. We like to think that this is the work that CCWD engenders through the 17 community colleges and the 15 workforce areas. Our governor, on slide 8, a quote from him, is committed to investing in Oregon's future for all Oregonians. The governor has repeatedly stated in his budget, demonstrates that education is his first priority, and his budget reflects a balanced approach to a PK-20 education continuum. So what drives the work of CCWD, the community colleges and workforce development? On slide 9, we think it is Oregon's demand for well-educated and a highly skilled workforce, that we work in partnership, that we have to increase our data collection and reporting so that you have confidence and that we are accountable for the public trust of the funds, and we need to strengthen and rebuild programs and services that have been disinvested in since the recession. So driver number 1, we all benefit when Oregon's workforce is well-educated and highly skilled. We are some distance from that reality. Oregon ranks 43rd among states for state and local spending on higher education. Oregon ranks 46th among the states for state funding per student in higher education. And Oregon ranks third highest among the 15 western states in community college tuition. If we have aspirations for the 21st century, Oregon must assume a leadership role to build the talent capital of the nation. We must have a laser-like focus on those investments to make us successful. I'm on slide 12, where it compares and contrasts the skills of 1950, where all you needed was a high school diploma to get a good job that paid a good wage. That's no longer true. Critical skills are needed for the majority of today's jobs, as shown in that in 2000, 65% of our jobs are skilled. Community colleges provide those critical skills that we need today. Slide 13. You've seen this slide before. I brought it in my overview, but I thought it bared repeating. Close to two-thirds of all jobs in high-wage occupations and those that are paying more than $45,000 a year require at least a bachelor's degree. At the other extreme, 80% of jobs in low-wage occupations require nothing less or nothing more than short-term on-the-job training. If we know that education...
Excuse me, Ms. Paul. Representative Morgan.
I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if it would be possible to ask Ms. Prosperelli if she would take us through this follow-up information that she gave us. I'm particularly interested in the disaggregation of the enrollment information, and I think that it would... be real beneficial to the committee to have her step through this. And I didn't mean to break in right now, but maybe just for the last 15 minutes or something like that.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'd be happy to. I actually have some of that information near the end. So we'll leave it in.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Williams? Yes. Okay, can you give me the elbow? I'll talk really, or does that have to kick under the table? Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about who benefits from this investment. We know that education matters, but what I'm going to posit in front of you is that there are in this affinity diagram, there are really three different beneficiaries to your investment in education. Slide 15. Individuals who have more education have higher weekly earnings. They are less likely to be unemployed, and their unemployment is of much shorter duration. And unemployment has an inverse relationship to wages and education. The positive economic and social impacts from Oregon was recently validated in the economic contribution of Oregon's community colleges, and that was a study that was done, a return on investment study. Average earnings of a community college student with an associate's degree is $40,771, or 117% more than someone without a high school diploma, and 37% higher than someone with a GED. A recent test question was, what percentage of persons drawing unemployment insurance payments in Oregon have just a high school diploma or less? Venture a guess, 71%. Slide 16, education remains an important element in creating a progressive economy where all voices are heard, yet gaps remain in racial groups. Median income for Hispanics, Blacks, Whites, and with a bachelor's degree and associate's degree are approximately the same. I want to point out that community colleges continue to serve a higher proportion of minority students than any other post-secondary education entity. Gender issues of inequity also continue, although they are closing. Slide 17 shows you that a woman with a bachelor's degree will make approximately the same as a man with some college. Oregon community colleges enroll 54% women. So how do individual Oregonians benefit? A dollar of investment in an Oregon community college education reaps a $5 lifetime increase in earnings. And I'm going to just go. So the next area of benefit is society. The data on slide 20 displays a simple point of a struggle of a mother, a single mother without any post-secondary education, without a diploma. She is nearly 50% more likely to live in poverty, and that drops to 30% if she has some college. Slide 21, a more educated Oregonian also has a higher perception of their own personal health. And Joe Courtwright of Impreza shared information with the State Board of Education recently, and the question he asked was, what fraction of adults enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan have a high school diploma or less? 62%. On slide 22, higher learning also translates into a more engaged populace. The data here shows that voting records by age and education, and the trend is upward. That's a good thing. Slide 22. It costs nearly $25,000 a year to maintain an inmate at an Oregon correctional facility, and that's in general fund terms. CCWD projects it will cost an average of less than $3,000 a year in state general fund to support a full-time equivalent for the biennium. You can do the math. That little box shows you that one inmate equals 8.3 community college FTE. Another quiz question. What fraction of the inmates at the Oregon Correctional System have a high school diploma or less? 72%. A A dollar of investment in Oregon Community College education reaps $4.6 in taxpayer returns. Increasing opportunities for Oregon for a college education makes a quantifiable difference in the costs of second chances. The student and the state share a rate of return that's almost equal. I don't know about you, but that 19% annual rate of return on the taxpayer over 7 years is a little better, I learned, than the PERS Tier 2 is. Certainly not as good as Tier 1 today. So what are the benefits to the economy? Let's talk about the last area of affinity here that benefits the economy of a well-educated and trained Oregonian. Again, this data is from Joe Courtright. One-third of all Oregon households have at least one household member who has a bachelor's degree. What fraction of Oregon's income tax revenues are paid by this one-third of households? 55%. More than half of Oregon's revenue comes from one-third of our families. More than half of Oregon's $12 billion general fund budget comes from people with college degrees. So on slide 27, the return on investment in community colleges, as I said, is quantifiable in a number of ways that positively impact Oregon's economy. And it's always important, especially to the people behind me, that first bullet, that Oregon Community College students stay in their community. 93% of students who go to college in their community remain. Slide 28, on the contrary of who benefits most, in conventional wisdom, it is the individual. Now, the study that was just completed would say, no, really, it's Oregon and Oregon society that gets a 2-to-1 return for the investment in Oregon's community colleges on a credit hour basis. So what does all this mean? If we know it takes an investment, what's our goal? And on page 29 is the education enterprise, and also reflective of the education design team legislation, is where do we want to be by the year 2025? We need a highly skilled workforce that will drive the economy, and it will take education in lots of different places. Community colleges play a pivotal role in delivering on the education enterprise. They provide a bridge for high school students who are ready to earn college credit. They provide the opportunity for adults who need to gain basic literacy skills. We have literally thousands of students who are enrolled at a community college and a university earning credits at both institutions at the same time. And last but not least, the labor market is a great gain for the professional technical skills that are that students gain when they attend a community college. So where are we now? Slide 30 shows you where we are. And this is a glimpse of data that was shared at the PCC field visit recently. It identifies the distance we have between our aspirations and our current reality. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the CCWD budget. If you're on, I'm on slide 31. Oregon's demand for a well-educated and highly skilled workforce will take action in lots of different areas. Leadership, responsiveness, leveraging partnership, they'll also take an investment. The first two, and in priority order in the CCWD budget, is Program Option Package 101, which is state support for community colleges, and Program Option Package number 2, which is capital construction. What you can expect at the GRB level, the governor's recommended level, access. Colleges will be able to make modest increases in adding courses and programs. Not all, but most. We do anticipate increased enrollment. We'll be able to serve about 3,500 more students a year at the governor's recommended budget. And we expect greater responsiveness and flexibility to local needs and capital construction will help with that. The CCWD budget will also provide success by building focused camp capacity across the 17 community colleges. The department has been some time since it has brought before the legislature to the governor a proposal for statewide leadership. This time we have three: Program Option Package 105, Pathways to Advancement, Package 111, Virtual Learning, and Package 108, Increase in Healthcare Capacity. What you can expect from the governor's recommended budget in these three packages is an increased number of skilled healthcare professionals, more flexible college pathways for students, and greater alignment of education and workforce in virtual learning networks. On page 33, success will require career preparation and readiness. Again, it will require skilling up more Oregonians and increasing the knowledge of the readiness of workers and helping employers know who they have, who they're hiring, and what skills they have. These are packages 113, Skill Up Oregon, and package 112, Workforce and Career Readiness Certificate. On page 34, success will also require that CCWD at the state level and local colleges and workforce providers will have to work hand in hand to ensure that we have results for Oregonians. Page 35 is a list of initiatives, efforts, projects. And over the last two biennium, CCWD's role as a strategic leader has increased exponentially. We have the advent of a real joint boards of education. They have an agenda, and they have work to do. We have legislative mandates, particularly from the 05 legislative session around articulation and alignment, and that's coupled with accelerated learning options for high school students. We have been asked to do more and more work to respond to, as a collective, around occupational demands, not just for healthcare, manufacturing, and other areas. And we have had increased accountability across the board. We find ourselves without sufficient professional capacity inside the department to effectively respond to these demands. So success will require capacity to partner effectively. And on page 36, we have the program option packages that will help us do that. Chief among them, and not yet mentioned, program option package 104, which is accountability, and program option package 109, an integrated management information system for the department, and program option package 107, the OFACS, which is the financial aid cross-matching data across the institutions. I'm on page 37. Let's examine what we mean by accountability. CCWD has had an increased number of state, regional, and local reporting requirements. Our key performance measures doubled in the last biennium. We have continued to report on the 16 four A's, there are 16 performance measures. There has been a need for increased reporting for much and many of our federal programs, as well as increased fiscal monitoring and auditing. Success for the department, for community colleges and workforce partners, cannot be simply anecdotal stories. You expect more. We need real data that measures progress and results. Slide 39, increased federal reporting requirements, is just a picture. In the last several years, we've gone from 164 reporting elements to 258, nearly doubling. 46% of the department's budget comes from federal and other funds. We pass the major portion of this fund through to local areas, but we are still accountable for their results. Over the last 5 years, these resources have also increased data collection and reporting. We had a recent Department of Labor review of our workforce programs across the state. They were very pleased with the work that we had done around online payment requests from the field, as well as our strategic plan and joint delivery of one-stop services. On page 40, success requires expertise and an integrated data system. The department, again, is dependent on not simply on being able to collect the data, but also to analyze it and ensure that we are making good decisions with it. So we have packages 103, which is agency alignment, and I think I have already mentioned the others. Slide 41 is CCWD, the colleges, and our workforce partners are expected to, and demand accountability. To achieve the success I've been talking about for students and for Oregon's future, we must focus on continuing to rebuild our education and workforce programs. We simply do not have adequate community college resources, certainly not at the 43% of student support in the nation, to make any real meaningful progress on rebuilding programs and success. We need to reinvest. Slide 42 is a picture of where we are with the federal workforce investment dollars. We were notified on Friday when we received our federal allotment for program year 07. We have lost 10% in adult and youth and 17% for dislocated workers. So we are sitting at 112 is what is in the governor's recommended budget. That's what we thought we were going to get. We're going to get less than $100 million for the biennium. This is a conversation that I have had with Congressman Wu. I know that you all asked the question as well, and I will follow up with him about it. We simply cannot ask the community colleges to continue to lift this particular weight without when we're losing investment at the federal level. So slide 43, Oregon has begun to rebuild its community colleges in the last biennium. As you can see in this slide, which was part of the information that I shared last week, the governor's budget does move us forward. It's an increase of $55 million, will provide most colleges the ability to make some modest program expansions and to moderate tuition increases.
Mr. Chair. Senator Deckard, are we doing? Can we do questions, or are we
sure
trying to hold them?
No, go on.
Question. So, Kim, just two. One would be, it would be great to see before 1995-97, just to kind of get a better, longer historical perspective. But the second is if you look at where community colleges were in 95-97, and then if you added the slide of just take either the governor's number, just take the governor's number, a question one might ask, so I'll ask it, is you went from 326 to in the ballpark of $500 million over, and I can't do the quick statistical number that gives you, but it does seem like a large increase overall in community college funding. How would you respond that the legislature's been and the state's been very generous from 95 till now with take the governor's budget in 2007?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, well, I'd have you move ahead to slide 46. I'm not sure this is going to be an adequate response, but it'll be a beginning response to your question. I think when I first looked at this graph, I thought it was pretty complicated. But if you stare at it a while, the real story of the impact on college going is this shows 96-97, so not quite back as far as you were looking. And we certainly have historical data before that. But you can see the state investment and the enrollment number. And then look at the investment at 406,000 students, full-time equivalent, and 102 full-time equivalent 102, 400,000 students. I'm looking for money. It's not on there. Okay, I'm embarrassed. Senator Deckert, Mr. Chair, the Bill McGee is bringing me back to this chart, which really says that the if we looked at the resources in 9901, that's the community colleges and workforce development have lost resources in real terms given inflation, even though the number is larger. And certainly enrollment is larger. And the community college support fund is distributed on a per student basis. So as the students have grown, the money that comes to the support fund follows those students to the institution. So there is not a break in that either.
Representative Barnhart.
And the dollars per student declines.
Well, they shifted.
Just finishing that thought. As the number of students go up, the number of dollars you have available is smaller, then the dollars per student must decline even more. That's adjusting for inflation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is
a good time.
Yeah, a great segue, because I'm looking in this handout that you gave us in the beginning, and I'm looking at it's the fourth page in the graph that looks like this, which I think disaggregates the FTE across the different program areas, and it's very interesting to look at where the decreases were in that were pronounced in the enrollment. And first of all, I don't know what non-reimbursable programs are. What are those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, they are community education courses that are offered in the community on a fee basis. So the individual pays for the cost of the course, and they have been determined to be non-reimbursable either by statute or by administrative rule, because they are they're enrichment courses. So we do not
be an example of what?
Basket weaving.
Basket weaving. So those are different from...
Not necessarily. That's right. I'm sorry.
Okay, so then what's adult continuing education?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, adult continuing education is in the third special session, a change in reimbursability for those courses was provided by the legislature, and we rewrote what was reimbursable in adult continuing education to include health, safety, and workforce preparation courses, and some language courses. But it's not the full plethora of community enrichment and adult continuing ed that it was. So, you do see that was approximately 10% of enrollment in community colleges, and it is now 4%, that portion that is reimbursable.
And over 5 years, there's been a 58% drop in enrollment in adult continuing education classes, this is interesting to me, that adult continuing education dives off, which I think is a direct result of the loss of the match, the general fund match to those programs, that the lower division collegiate courses appear to be doing very well. There's something going on with professional technical, which I don't know whether that's the cost of the programs or just what that is, but the adult basic skills appears to be, not in too bad a shape, and the post-secondary remedial. It seems that the losses in enrollment are focused into some fairly discrete areas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, you're also looking at proportionality. There are 28,000 FTE in professional technical, and a reduction of 14% is sizable. We're looking at adult continuing at 3,000 and a proportional reduction of 58%. So we might have been looking at 6,000, where if you added another 15% to that 28, I think the scaling here also makes it a bit difficult to see the direct impact. Certainly, conversation with the college presidents and their boards, we are very concerned about the decline in professional, technical, and adult basic education. They are both ramp programs or bridge programs, one into college, one from college into the workforce, and that decline is troubling.
Thank you, Representative Barnard.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on that because I think you're on something really important. I think what you told us is that the definition of adult continuing education changed during one of the special sessions in the legislature, and that we dumped things that were in that category into the non-reimbursable category. I think that's what you said in different words. And one of the hypotheses, I think, that has been making the rounds, I don't know whether it's true or not, but one of them is that one of the reasons why the levies all failed was because the community colleges lost some of the goodwill that they had built up over time, because programs were moved away from the adult continuing education category, moved into the non-reimbursable category, and therefore many classes were actually closed during that time. What's your thought about that hypothesis as an explanation for the change in the relative popularity of community colleges among the voters?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I have heard the same corollary, that the reduction of courses for the community provided a level of connectivity to all of the community that was lost when the decision was made to no longer reimburse for it, which means that the college may still offer it, but they offer it at a much higher rate for the student who wants to take that course. So, and often they don't have enough students who want to take it, so it isn't offered. And that is certainly anecdotally, and I think there we will work to see if we can get something that maybe more than that, a reason given by voters for not voting yes.
And if I could follow up, too, on the other category that Representative Morgan was talking about, you were talking about the professional technical, it would be sure useful to know whether some of the shift in that number has to do with availability of courses. At the community college I'm most familiar with, there's a constant drumbeat that these are the most expensive courses and therefore the ones hardest for them to fund. And if that's the case, that could help explain that the trend line being up until the recession hit and then down since then.
Representative Morgan.
Well, and that was really where I was interested in going, because on the very last page of here is a bar graph that shows course selections offered statewide, and it clearly shows the impact of the funding gap in the recession. But I was wondering if it would be valuable to have the just disaggregate, somehow stack these bars to show what areas the class losses were in. It would be interesting to see whether there was a correlation between what's happening on that bar graph and what's happening on this line graph.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we'll bring that information back. I'm certain we can get it. I would hope to have it tomorrow, but if not, we'll have it as soon as we can bring it forward.
And I don't want anybody staying up all night doing this. So.
Well, we've been staying up all night for the last 3 weeks. So also, following up on Representative Barnhart, also then you have the professional technical programs that are enormously popular and have waiting lists and lottery, and so, you know, that's which is popular is we don't have the capacity. So Senator Devlin had a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just actually had one request for tonight. The other two are not for tonight because the other two are more larger. Can you, from 1995, because there seems to be some confusion here, give us how many times the legislature has adjusted what's reimbursable and what's not?
Yes.
So we can get some real clarification on when these things actually happened and what they were for, because I can see why you'd make a case that some classes maybe should not have a state subsidy Senator Morse and I want to take aerobics that night. I don't know if this comes.
I've been there.
Easy on the visuals.
This would be better.
But just give me 5 years on one item, and just the other is just a request. Can you give me basic tuition and fees for the last 5 years for the 17 community colleges? And when I say fees, I mean just sort of the basic fees that students would have to pay, not sort of the lab fees and all the other things that might be associated, just that. And can we actually get a copy of the formula?
Absolutely.
Okay. But I think we would be going into the fourth year of the current equalization formula. Is that it?
Actually, we're in the second year.
You're in the second year going into
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification. Is that a 5-year formula or a 6-year formula?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, it's a 6-year.
Okay. So if we could just get a copy of that. It has come up for discussion. So.
Absolutely.
We've got about 2 minutes.
Let's just jump to the end and end on time. I'm going to take you to page 48. These are key performance measures. We are seeing some positive results, and we use the arrows to try to indicate whether they were up or down or sideways. Then I would direct your attention to 49, which are the performance measures that are not headed in the right direction. And particularly among them would be about the middle of the page, since we've been talking about professional technical completion of degrees and certificates have dropped over the last several years, we believe, because of the loss of course sections being offered. We're still exceeding our target, but it's a disturbing trend, as I mentioned earlier. And the last two on that page, we have seen a slight downward trend in the rate of associate degree completers and a drop in the percentage of community college students persisting in their second year at the university.
Representative Barner, could you tell those of us who are new a little bit about that last measure and what that means? The very last one.
Yes. We track the success of transfer students who leave the community college and go to the university. We have those who transfer and persist. And we have fallen from 79% who transfer and persist to 76%.
So we're talking, if I may.
Sure.
So we're talking about students who actually transferred to the university, but then dropped out after their first year, or during or immediately after their first year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I will endeavor to bring back to you the exact time frame. That I'm not certain of, but the concept that you have stated is.
In any event, they didn't finish their bachelor's degree.
That's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, tomorrow we're going to talk more about how education matters and how community colleges are providing results on that theme. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned.